Want to attend a virtual data conference that doesn't feel like watching an awkward YouTube video that runs all day? Well, our virtual Inspire conference is just right for you, and it's coming up on May 18th to 21st. Plus, it's free. We'll hear from some amazing data science experts at Inspire, including Dr. DJ Patel, Jake Porway, Billy Bean, and Dr. Hannah Fry, plus many more data and tech superstars. We'll also tour the world for International Women in Data Science panel discussions, addressing data science in education and digital transformation. There are also other fantastic surprises and experiences sprinkled into the schedule. And we're so excited to have two special video sessions of Data Science Mixer premiering at the conference. I interviewed internationally recognized expert and author Alberto Cairo about data visualizations and how to create and consume them efficiently. I also had a chat with Renee Teat, who's the Director of Data Science for Heliocampus, and also well known for sharing her journey into data science on Twitter and in her Becoming a Data Scientist podcast. I hope you'll join us at Inspire for these exciting conversations and much more. Register for free now at inspire.alteryx.com. You know how on those TV crime shows, they catch a fuzzy image of a license plate on a surveillance camera, and they take it back to the tech experts who magically enhance the numbers on the plate to identify the villains? Well, while that magical enhance might be mostly Hollywood fiction, there are incredible advancements happening in AI, including tools that make it easier than ever for people at all skill levels to process audio, image, and video data. Welcome to Data Science Mixer, a podcast featuring top experts in lively and informative conversations that will change the way you do data science. I'm Susan Curry-Civic, the data science journalist for the Alteryx community. And in this episode, I talked with two folks from Alteryx partner Veritone.
My name is Trevor Jones, VP of Business Operations at Veritone. What we do is we're actually big Alteryx customers. I've been using Alteryx for about 7-8 years now, presented at Inspire, and big fan. We've also done recently is built an integration with AIware and Alteryx, which is a really fun project to be a part of, and happy to be here.
Awesome, thank you. And Robbie?
Yeah, my name is Robbie Booth. I'm the one that talks funny. My official title, it seems to change. It's like I've been here 2 years and I'm going on my third title. But today, I think I'm Senior Director of AI Cognitive Engines for Veritone. Or at least I think I will be tomorrow. Yesterday, I was Head of Engineering for a government legal and compliance organization. And I'm a he, or the Scots get, you know, it's fine. But...
All right, great. Thank you so much. Trevor and Robbie are experts on Veritone's AIware tools. We talk about how the AIware tools integrate with Alteryx, dive into the layers of layered cognition, and find out why that magical enhance is, for now, a Hollywood-only feature. Let's get started. So as you know, on Data Science Mixer, one of the things that we like to do during the show is treat ourselves to a little happy hour drink or snack. So are you having anything special with you there as we're chatting today?
Yes. Today, I'm not breaking out the good stuff, but I do have the Glenlivet. It's a 12-year-old single malt. I figured I would be a complete representation of a Scottish person for today's interview.
Love it. Awesome.
Perfect. What I have is electrolyte water, because I'm obviously a party animal. Watch out for me.
You are so SoCal.
No, I actually have a bike ride after this and a couple more meetings. So, you know, just kind of keeping it low key for now. But don't worry, I will catch up to you later, Robbie. I promise.
Well, I'm umpiring my kid's 6-year-old baseball game, which is hence why the early start, because you kind of need it to get through that.
Love it. Terrific. All right. So you guys gave us a little bit of a hint of what Veritone is all about, but maybe give us a little more detail here on some of the AI tools that you've developed and what different purposes they might be used for. And maybe tell us a little bit about one of your favorites in particular.
So what's interesting about Veritone is we really have two real things. So one is, you know, we have a platform that we can use to orchestrate, scale, and run different types of AI jobs. And what's kind of cool about it, and it's a problem that, you know, I was running into in other companies that I was working at, is that, you know, today it all kind of comes down to, where is the data? How do you land the data, and how do you decide what models you want to run? And you know, you're running one model, and all of a sudden some other company comes up with a better plan, and you want to switch, but it's just not simple. So Veritone came up with this really nice way of just kind of creating a common standard for input and output. And so using this platform, you can basically trivially swap, for example, translation models, and then move them around and decide which one works best for your scenario, because you know it's not one size fits all. And so we have this platform that you can scale and orchestrate, but of course, the whole sort of value premise and proposition is you have to be able to run different models on it. And so we went ahead and built tools and applications that sit on that layer, you know, and use those sort of engines, and ones we've built ourselves too. So, you know, we've spent a lot of time in my space. Obviously, you know, Trevor spent a ton of time around Alteryx, but because he's a finance geek and really cares about some specific ops problems. But we've really gotten into things like, you know, using computer vision to like help redact, you know, faces for Freedom of Information Act requests. Mm-hmm. Things like that, where you can sort of layer different types of cognition together and different types of models to create some really powerful results, you know? And so it's been kind of interesting watching how those three sort of pieces of the stack, sort of like the platform that lets you ingest, scale, and run different types of models, the different models themselves, and then applications you build on the models can all kind of work together.
Awesome, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a lot. I mean, it's been super extensible and you know, kind of a labor of love. But yeah, we're excited about it.
One of the use cases we've been exploring recently is around interaction analytics. So these days, there's so much content being generated through, you know, Zoom and Hangouts and all these things, you know, especially since COVID. And it's a lot of data that's just not being untapped. And so one of the use cases that we really see emerging is around interaction analytics. And what that really means is you have a conversation between people is, well, how can I query that? How can I query those recordings, right? And so some of the applications could be sales calls for sales enablement training, or are my sales reps being effective, you know, revenue generating type activity, right? Everything to telemedicine, are my doctors providing a good experience, or call center, are my call center agents, are they complying to our policies, and you know, are they providing a good experience, and to see all that information. And so kind of the way that works is, you know, either using our platform natively or working with Alteryx as well, as you say, you point it at the media and you get dashboards that shows you, you know, what are they talking about, what's the sentiment, computer vision aspects to figure out what are the facial expressions, you know, who are the people on the call using facial recognition, content, you know, entity extraction, topical extraction, those types of things. And what I really like about it is that we get to use such a diverse amount of AI engines together in one solution. So that's, and it's really fun as well, because you get beautiful dashboards as well. So that's been kind of a fun one we've been doing over the last couple of months.
Yeah, that's very cool. I was trying to count all the things that you were mentioning. It sounds like topic modeling, sentiment analysis, entity recognition. I mean, there's a lot going on there.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Layered cognition is such a buzzword for us. You know, it that's when things really start to light up, you know, when you can start to like run a couple of different models on the same data set, you know, and all of a sudden you're providing a ton of functionality that seems quite extraordinary. Or it would have seemed extraordinary maybe, you know, 4 or 5 years ago.
And now it's just ordinary. Huh. Well, funny
it's
how
like, what are you going to do next?
You know? So your term for that is layered cognition. Did I catch that correctly?
I mean, that's what I've been calling it. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what other folks would say. But it's basically, you know, the ability of running, you know, to either, you know, have multiple models all processing the same piece of information, either in serial or parallel, just depending on what you're doing. So it's things like being able to verify someone's identity by using like computer vision, and then like getting a voice print, maybe some biometrics. It's doing a voice analysis. It's really quite interesting.
Yeah, very cool. So it sounds like this is really a way of making the most of all of the unstructured data that's out there, whether it's these conversations or other potential sources. What are some of the other kinds of sources of that unstructured data that you've seen folks working with?
So I think it would be fair to say that, you know, in driven by the market today, it's primarily audio and video. But what's interesting is that's just what's driving the bulk workloads today. You know, we're starting to see other use cases really kind of come to the fore. And I think in the last sort of 6 to 8 months, maybe 12 months, all of a sudden it's been about integrations, you know, basically integrating our stack with, you know, somebody who has like a large data source and wants to like light up and basically run some kind of operation that they can then do some kind of visualization against, you know, or get some insight on. So, but I think today it's fair to say it's still mostly audio and video. Mm-hmm. And sometimes static documents too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that would be the vast bulk of what we do.
Very cool. And I'm assuming it would be possible to combine those different things as well then, right? Combine somehow the documents with what you're getting out of audio and video and so forth?
Yeah.
That's actually a very popular use case for us is searchability mm-hmm. across a diverse input mm-hmm. of content, right? So e-discovery is something that is very common within the legal sub-vertical for us. And what they do is, you know, they have a massive amount of content, audio recordings, you know, phone calls, documents, emails, you know, you name it, they have it. And they need to just dump everything in and be able to search for keywords across all that content. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of those use cases that's right in our wheelhouse. And because what it does is it flexes the muscle of being able to run all the models that work together and have strong search capabilities.
Yeah, very cool. So going back to the use cases and the really interesting applications that you've seen, I always think it's neat to hear stories as much as we can in whatever terms you're willing and able to describe them of people who have put these tools to use and really made some meaningful impact on their businesses and their outcomes. Are there a couple of favorite stories and use cases that you have that you've run across during your time working on these tools?
Veritone started off as a media and entertainment kind mm-hmm. of centric organization. And then they found that, you know, the way the platform had been built would, you know, it would easily allow them to move to other business verticals. And so government legal has been something we kind of kicked off in the last maybe 18 months. Mm-hmm. But I know that we have a product called Identify, which really it's not really something we've used a ton while we're looking to see what happens with legislation around facial recognition.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But that was actually used to catch someone who was pulled over for speeding, that there was an existing warrant out for a violent mm-hmm. crime in another district.
Oh, wow.
So what's really interesting is that it turns out that a lot of local law enforcement doesn't actually share their known offender databases. And so the concept with that product is, you know, you basically just ingest all of the known offender databases from all of these different agencies, and then they can search and do a facial match across all of those folks. And so I think somebody was picked up for DUI, turned out they were wanted for violent crime elsewhere, and that they'd sort of, you know, fled. And I think it wasn't like it was just a couple of counties away. I think it was Alaska to Southern California. You know? So it was something that you just would not be normally, you'd normally find. I'm trying to think of the other analogies and stories that we've talked about publicly. I'm not quite sure which ones I'm allowed to mention, but there's a lot of use cases that are really interesting, like things like, you know, in the power industry, using drones that are powered, that have, you know, like the DJI drones, for example, have NVIDIA Jetson devices on board, and really powerful computer vision and object detection techniques and models. You can use them to check power lines after a storm so that crews don't have to manually climb each pole to verify that's okay, you know. It's those types of scenarios, you know, being able to take like a whole ton of visual data and push it through and run an analysis on like which ones have the anomalies that need to be manually checked by a human, that can just save tons and tons of time. So those are probably sort of two of the scenarios that I can think of just off the top of my head that I know we can talk about, but
there's definitely one on the media and entertainment side that I think is pretty fun. So we work with advertisers that place media on live sporting events or their sponsors. And so with live sporting events, you don't always know where the cameras are going to be, which way they're facing, you know, things like that. So you want to try to measure the ad value of your sponsorship, right? And so what we use for that use case is logo detection. Mm-hmm. What we do is we ingest the media for the sporting event, and we run it through logo detection. And what it does is identifies where it is on the screen, what angle it's at, and how prominent it is on the screen. And what we do is compile an aggregate index that essentially equates that to value. And then we match that against whether it's Google Analytics impressions or orders and things like that. We actually attribute that back to the actual impression.
Yeah. So really, actually, this is a really good point, Trevor. I'm thinking in the M&E space, there's some really nice already announced things like our partnership with the San Francisco Giants. You know, so we basically took the San Francisco Giants' entire media catalog, ingested it, indexed out all the players, and now for the first time, you know, if they want to find like an image, you know, or video of a specific player, you know, they can very, very quickly pull all of the clips and highlights and create these amazing highlight reels going back throughout their entire recorded history. Wow. So it's just really cool, you know?
Yeah.
And of course, before that would have been people having to manually index and just like trawl through things and just remember where things were and like manually catalog. So super powerful.
So Robbie, you told us earlier that your six-year-old has his first baseball game tonight. So are you creating an archive of all of his baseball game media from over the years so that...
Funnily enough, uh-oh. I do. So from my accent, you may be able to tell I wasn't born here, so therefore think this game's silly, but we're fully embracing it in the Booth household. And I'm not going to be the best coach or the best, you know, like dad trainer, but we will be the best analytics team. And so, so I was showing you earlier, we've got it's a smart baseball.
Amazing.
IoT device, charges via induction. And we'll measure spin, velocity, curve, whether it was in the strike zone, all that kind of fun stuff. We have the same thing for the actual baseball bat. And wow. Then all of the at-bats for all of the kids is on video. I index it all. And then, you know, I measure difference in variation of swing over time.
That is
so. For example,
wow.
Yeah. So for example, my eldest son, we installed a batting cage and he got all excited. And so we've been cranking up the pitching machine. And so he'll throw pitches at like, you know, 46 to 50 miles an hour. And so he got all hyped up on hitting that. And now he's got this problem where he starts to swing too early. And telemetry shows that his bat speed has slowed down. So this is what you get for having a dork as a dad, I guess.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, yeah. You may not know this, but I also have a six-year-old in baseball, so I have a feeling this is an area we should be collaborating.
We should be collaborating on this, Trevor. So we've got all the things. We've got the axe bat, we've got the swing tracker, we've got the pitch tracker.
Wow.
Yeah. I would show you the telemetry of my 9-year-old's swings, but I don't think this podcast could handle the excitement.
Oh, well, we can throw some descriptive analytics on that. I'm all over.
Oh, well,
I'm here.
Yeah, that's it. I do have analytics for all of these things. It's like it traces the swing. It shows you the potential damage of the shot. You know, it tells you what you're doing wrong. But it's really the power of data. You know, and it's amazing that. In our lifetimes, we're getting to see like this application, you know, it's been really neat.
It's going to look very different when kids from your kids' generation will be moving up into college sports and so forth, and all of the coaching process
crazy.
And recruitment will be.
Yeah.
Can we see your 6-year-old data?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what was wild was so I just bought this new camera. So it's by a company called Veo. And it's basically two 4K cameras that you position in one corner of the field, and it captures the whole game, and it tracks the ball. And what you do is you basically upload their the entire game footage. So it's basically, you know, for 3 hours, times 4K video, mm-hmm. up to their cloud, and then they go run player identification on all of the all of the players, so you can create like highlights. Like it's absolutely out of control. They've been using this stuff in Europe the remote cameraman, you know, for all of the like soccer games when they kicked everything back up in the pandemic and they didn't want to have like too many people that were like near the players. So all the cameramen camera people rather in British sports right now are all these like robot cameras. Wow. It's amazing. Yeah.
Wow. So cool. So much.
Because I always get really excited. I always end up like pointing the camera at my feet when somebody does something good, because I get too excited. You see it like some Scottish unintelligible shouting, you know?
Excellent.
It's not good.
It's terrific. It's awesome that, you know, you have parents with analytic skills who can take all these data, set all this up, you know, have such amazing insights. When you've got tools like what you have at your fingertips, it sounds like there's so much that you can do with all of that data that you've collected. Thinking about folks who are wanting to work with their own kids' sports data or whatever other video, audio, text data that they might have, what would be some of the things that somebody who is maybe not super sophisticated in data science could try that they might like to experiment with? And then kind of on the flip side of that, for somebody who is more experienced, who is sophisticated in data science, what would be the appeal of trying out tools like what Veritone offers?
Yeah, I'll take that one. I think that if you look at analytical maturity, every company is at a different place in their evolution. Right. And, you know, I think one of the misconceptions out there is that because AI is one of those just completely overused terms. Right. And so when people are thinking about their own analytical maturity and what their aspirations are and what their roadmaps are and where they place their budgets, I think there are some folks out there that think that AI is, oh, yeah, that's the thing that I'm going to do after all of the things that I know of that I already need to do with my structured data and some automation initiatives and things like that. But it's really, you know, companies like, you know, like us and others who are, you know, really making AI more approachable, is it's something that you can just experiment with, right? And there, you don't have dependencies on your, you know, your analytical maturity for you to start leveraging it, right? Just think of it as another data source that represents the vast majority of your data that you're not doing anything with today.
Right.
And they're really kind of parallel efforts, I guess, is the way that I would say that.
Well, one of the reasons I came to this company in the first place was when I first saw what we were doing with Automate, simply because, you know, if you look at other industries where people have empowered scientists or just other folks with tools that don't require like a high level entry point. So if you think of like video game development and the rise of the game engine, like Unity, you know, Unreal Engine, things like that, it's really amazing like what the difference has been. You know, I got my start in the video game business, and to go make a game, like when I was working on Flight Sim, we'd have 150 people and it'd take us 5 years. And now
deep sigh.
Yeah, it was painful. And then, you know, and we started playing around with the concepts of like a common engine, and then really by sort of the end of my tenure in the video game space, you know, you license your engine, and the bulk of your team are really working in that sort of script layer or the drag and drop. So there, all of a sudden, your team doesn't have 150 engineers and a couple of token artists. You know, you basically have designers, you have, you know, people who are creating experience. You're basically empowering creatives, and I kind of think that that's really what Automate's going to do. You know, before you had all of these barriers to entry, and really, I think Automate's goal and other tools like it, you know, which are inevitably going to pop up, is to really be the way that you can go run any kind of cognition without having to write any code to support it. You know, and to do so in the cloud, and to kind of pick what your environment looks like, so that you can, you know, if you need to run it on GPU, you can, and, you know, just make it super simple. So I think it's really exciting what things are going to look like in 5 years' time. You know, I mean, I think our kids are going to be taking classes on, you know, how to like build zero shot object detection models, hook them up to their Lego. And, you know, and I do it for a class project, and that will be like second grade.
Oh, man.
It's going to be amazing. I mean, my second grader built a Lego R2-D2 robot, and he kind of drives it using his like iPad. And,
wow.
Imagine, so Trevor, you know, I don't think it's a stretch. Like, imagine that with like a little NVIDIA GPU in there, and all of a sudden you can go run some object detection, and now R2-D2 can run around and not bump into walls. And it's just mind-blowing how cool and how quickly this is moving. You know, because really the algorithms haven't really moved and advanced that much. It's the ability for more of us to apply that's become this sort of this democratization and this driving force. I'm super pumped.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was in elementary school, people were building volcanoes out of clay and like using vinegar and baking soda. It's just really pales in comparison to these other cool projects. So
I think I just aged myself because we had this like one computer in the whole school, and it was like this old IBM thing, and you got one hour on it in a month, and you could go down there and write something in Logo.
Yeah, I hear that for sure. Oh, man. So on this note of democratizing access to these to algorithms and to AI here, how do people get started with this if somebody wants to give this a shot with whatever data they have on hand?
Well, we offer free trials on our platform. So anyone can just go to AIware.com and sign up for a free trial. And you can train libraries, right? You can use the Alteryx integration. You can load your own content and experiment, you know, immediately.
Very cool.
Yeah. And as a developer, it's not even that hard. I mean, I remember going back to my job interview 2 years ago, our CEO, Chad Steelberg, is a really smart guy. I got this one, after my interview, I got this one line email from him saying, go build something on the platform and make it cool.
Nice.
So it's like, all right. So I went and grabbed the documentation, and I was able to build it. I mean, even at sort of a fairly early stage of maturity, I was able to build my own like old, engine. We call them engines on our platform. It's basically a way of running a model. And I was able to build a little computer vision model using some open source code from GitHub and have it running and recognizing photos of our CEO. I think it only took me about 3 or 4 hours.
Nice.
You know, to build the thing, and that was from having zero experience or exposure to the platform. So it's advanced a lot since then, as well.
Very cool. And of course, I think Trevor, also you mentioned earlier the relationship with Alteryx. Can you talk a little bit more about that? And for people who are Alteryx users who listen to the podcast, how they might use the tools together?
Definitely. One of the things that we've really enjoyed doing over the last 3 months, 4 months, is talking with the Alteryx aces. So we engaged with them immediately and started brainstorming ideas as to, you know, where the applications for AIware plus Alteryx, where those would be, right? So that's been a really fun ride. We're also sponsoring Inspire this year. So we're excited that there will be part of the keynote, as well as presentations by Mark Frisch, as well as AJ Guisande. So they're, you know, among the two strongest adopters out of the gate, and have been really wonderful to work with as you know, fellow thought leaders in the space. And I'd say, generally speaking, we're engaging with Alteryx at all levels, right? We're working with sales engineers, we're working with marketing, we're working with executive leadership, it's just been really fun to see the companies come together and work together for a common cause, which is bringing AI into the analytics space.
Definitely. We've had at least one guide to using the AIware tools with Alteryx published on the Alteryx community. So that would be one place that folks could look for sort of an example of an application, and then, you know, actually pulling the tools into a workflow and using them there.
Actually, this week we're publishing starter kits.
Ah, sweet.
Some really great starter kits for people just to have some fun with their data. You know, if you just want to do basic facial recognition or transcription or translation or just sentiment or, you know, things like that, you want to play just in one category at a time or bring them together for the full interaction analytics solution, they're built to support that. And we think that'll just make it a lot easier for an Alteryx user to not really have to think about what they're doing AI-wise and just kind of point it at some media and see what you get.
Nice. Yeah. And if those starter kits are published when the podcast is published, then we'll be sure to link to that in the show notes as well, so folks can easily click through and check those out. So kind of a random question that's something I was curious about. I think, Robbie, earlier you mentioned the company coming out of this media and entertainment background. So I'm just curious kind of how that evolution happened to now AIware, right? Because I can see a connection, but I'm curious about that, if that's something we can flesh out a little bit.
Well, Trevor, you predate me by a little while, but I can give you the all I know. So we'll kind of go on this archaeological hunt here. But so obviously Veritone was formed by the Steelberg brothers. Big background in media and entertainment and the ad space. They'd sold their previous companies to Google. They start Veritone, and really they were basing it on sort of the Latin, you know, so like the direct correlation to Latin would be truth in the signal, or at least how they're choosing to interpret it. And then really sort of AIware as a product, it's, you know, what's been really cool about this, and it really resonated with me as someone who in my previous life, my whole job had been to try and land Fortune 500 companies with these big AI workloads and just running into a whole ton of complexity and pain, not fun stuff, just like really frustrating work. So the idea of like an operating system that would allow me to just orchestrate AI workloads, regardless of whether I want to run it, on-prem, I can be cloud agnostic, I can run it on a laptop, I can run it on a desktop computer. Our North Star is pursuing sort of truth in the signal of noise and in unstructured data primarily. I think that was our origin. And then the methodology by which we would do that was we'd build this operating system that would basically simplify a lot of that complexity and just remove that from us in the same way that, you know, cloud meant that we don't need to really worry about, you know, the size of the box that we have sitting under our desks that we want to go crunch and build a model with. You know, it's been very liberating, I think. Mm-hmm. Trevor, do you have any other funny insight? I liked my story, but if it was really just because they were like playing beer pong and they decided that Veritone would be cool, I don't think we should.
I had like two or three bullets queued up in the back of my head, and you crushed it, man. You already said them.
Because I can just imagine Chad and Ryan like going surfing and then like having this argument about, you know, what it should be called.
Yeah, I thought it was Ryan made this really funny comment to me one time, and because you know they're serial entrepreneurs, and they've been just hitting them out of the park, and so I think Ryan looked at Chad and he's like, Chad's like, I want to start an AI company, and Ryan's like, of course he had to pick something hard, you know.
That's awesome.
Making AI easy, you know, bringing AI to the world, right? And you know, of course, you had to do that.
You know? Amazing. That's great. I love that there's etymology behind the name as a big nerd. I think that's super cool. Yeah, it's interesting how many times the ideas of playing and having fun with what you're doing in AI. I mean, I think those words have recurred kind of a lot in this conversation. So I think that says a lot about what y'all are working on and how folks will enjoy working with it. So one question that we ask all of our guests and that I will ask y'all, this is our alternative hypothesis recurring segment that we have, very formal here. And the question is, and if either or both of you would like to take this, feel free. What is something that people often think is true about data science or about AI, but that you have found to be incorrect?
Well, I mentioned mine earlier, which is that AI comes after analytical maturity, right? It's the when you're moving through the, you know, from descriptive to predictive to prescriptive analytics, and you're moving along the, you know, you're evolving on the value chain. That AI is sort of that thing at the end, you know, but it's just not true, right? So I think that AI is here, it's approachable, it's easy, and that nearly every business process could benefit from it in a very, in a very simple way.
Terrific.
I think for me, it would be that it's still not magic. Mm. You know, the number of times we'll talk to, I think Trevor landed on, you know, talking about like different companies have different levels of maturity, and so, you know, we'll talk to a company and they'll have audio that's recorded at an extremely low bit rate with a ton of background noise on it. You can barely understand what somebody's saying, and then the expectation that somehow you would get accurate transcription from that is just, you know, it's just not good. I mean, there's certain things you can do. Obviously, you can run a bunch of noise reduction. You can try and pop the signal a little bit. But at the end of the day, it's an algorithm somebody wrote, operationalized, turned into a model, trained, and then we put it on the platform. And so, while you're looking for signal in that noise for sure, your noise can't be garbage. Mm-hmm. And I think we still run into that I would say a good percentage of the time that there's just still a bunch of corrupt stuff, and there's very little you can do with that,
That's really true. Yeah, it's really true. Sometimes we get surveillance, video, right? So we're gonna stream surveillance video, and you say, okay, well, why didn't the engine pick up, identify that person? And then you're looking at the image and you're like, can you tell me who that person is?
It's because they all watched that TV show. It's like, whatever, name that cop show where they run the magic enhance button.
Magnify.
It's like, where's
magnify.
The magic enhance button? Yeah. And then you press it and all of a sudden it magically becomes like this like high definite image, And so, no.
That doesn't exist?
I mean,
what?
Oh. I don't even know the names of the shows, but I know there's a ton of them.
That's great. That's a great point. Yeah, it's data science is not magic. You have to have some sort of foundation there to work with before you can actually do much with it. So that's a great point.
We do spend quite a bit of time now in education, sort of working with customers, sort of explaining, what are the things that they can do. Actually, one last good example we had was we have this redaction product, which I talked about earlier, which we use for freedom of information requests. And a university had an incident and they sent us all this video and asked us if we could go ahead and just redact all of the people in it. Well, what's interesting is not only do we use, we don't do facial recognition, we do head detection. So we've basically trained an object detection engine to detect heads. And then we put bounding boxes around those heads, and then we have some other tech, like if you occlude a head, so all of a sudden you're off the screen or something, or so you step behind somebody, we use interpolation to kind of keep track of where we think you are, and the solution works pretty well. It's kind of a combination of data science and just good old-fashioned software engineering. Well, what's interesting was when they sent us the video, the video had an effective frame rate of 3 frames per second.
Oh my.
And we maybe only sample the video like maybe, twice a second or something like that. So we ended up with all these weird scenarios where, humans would appear to blip and teleport across the screen. So you wouldn't know that they were the same object or something. So it's, but that does happen a lot, because at some point that facility probably had to make decisions on storage, and that determined how many times they were going to take basically static shots, and then they ran all those static shots through some kind of movie maker and ended up with this bizarre kind of frame rate thing. So I think dealing with those types of data sources is going to be a real thing, like 7-Eleven grainy video feeds and all kinds of other things. That's going to be a reality for quite some time to come, I think.
Yeah,
and one thing that's been really nice with COVID, I think this, I'm the first person to start a sentence that way, is that these call, that video of calls like Zoom and, Teams and all that is really good for facial recognition, right? Mm-hmm. So it's right square on the face. It's usually good resolution, right? It's prominent in the screen, and the audio quality is really good for, transcription and some of the NLP stuff. So, so the good news is that tends to work really well. We've actually been kind of blown away. We're training, libraries to do facial recognition on, some of the calls we've been getting. And it's amazing that we'll just take, one picture of somebody from their LinkedIn profile and it'll catch every frame in the recording, and we're used to having to train, 3 to 4 to 5 different images for the same person. So that's been really cool to see.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, certainly all different kinds of data available now that maybe we didn't have in the past that we can do new things with. So anything that we haven't talked about yet that you want to get in there that you want to be sure to mention?
Yeah, I think that given the diverse opportunity that we have within the AI space and just the general capabilities of what AI is able to do is that we love new ideas. For, you know, for myself, I think one of the things that we're going to have fun with over the next few months is jumping into predictive and onboarding, you know, predictive models and things like that to help us with, you know, forecasting and orchestrating some of our other engines. And I think that's going to be, you know, a really fun project. But, you know, even if you take what they're doing with Illuminate, where you're taking, you know, known offenders database. Yeah. But what about for retail? If you want to track VIPs or you want to track known fraudulent folks or whoever, and maybe things like that. And so there's so many different opportunities where AI is going to disrupt everything. And we love just talking about those ideas and just problem solving. And so I would just encourage anyone who is having these ideas to reach out and let's start a conversation.
Preferably over scotch.
So thank you both for joining us on Data Science Mixer.
Absolutely. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, thanks very much. And go Mighty Muscles. I have to give a shout out to my 6-year-old. Go Ronin.
Yes. Can't wait to hear about the game. Thanks for listening to our Data Science Mixer chat with Trevor Jones and Robbie Booth of Veritone. Hear more from Veritone at the Alteryx Inspire Conference on May 18th to 21st. We've also got links for resources for trying out Veritone's AIware tools in your Alteryx workflow in our show notes at community.alteryx.com/podcast. Also, be sure to join us on the Alteryx community for this week's cocktail conversation to share your thoughts. Robbie and Trevor talked about how they're using their data skills to support their kids' athletic careers, tracking and analyzing their baseball stats. Have you ever used your analytics and data science skills for a fun personal project or for someone in your family? Tell us about what you did and share your ideas. You can leave a comment directly on the episode page at community.alteryx.com/podcast or post on social media with the hashtag Data Science Mixer and tag Alteryx. Cheers!